The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And time to open the cover on a brand new issue, Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. This one for, of course, September 2022. It features Carolina horses. And there's a whole, I don't know what the word is when you have a group of horses. There's, various words for when you have groups of animals. And some of the words are really strange. I don't know what you say for a whole bunch of horses stomping through the water like these ones are doing. But there they are. There's also a bonus pullout, which we will not get to, I'm sure. Lake Norman and beyond. Plus the new breed of BNBs and various other articles. Well, let's get started as we always do with the From Elizabeth column by Elizabeth Hudson, editor-in-chief. She calls this month's column Creature Comforts. Two vintage cameras, a Brownie, and a 70-year-old Argus ArgoFlex 75 are propped up on the fireplace mantle in the Explorer, one of five themed rooms in the Elmwood 1820 Bed and Breakfast Inn in Washington. Next to those cameras, a stack of wilderness books, Jack London's Tales of the North, and a few worn Wolf Cub Scout handbooks, their spines crinkled and cracked. On the hearth, a wicker basket holds old National Geographic maps, just like the ones I pored over at my grandmother's house as a child. North America in the Age of the Dinosaurs, the historic Mediterranean, the African continent. On Sunday nights back then, I'd lie on the floor in front of the television, transfixed by Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, the white-haired, white mustached Marlon Perkins carrying me far away from my home in Asheboro. I was riveted by the slinking movements of the Siberian tigers of Asia and the human-like behavior of the lowland gorillas of Africa. I delighted over the graceful antelope, gazelles and greater kudu, and the slender oryx, balletic on the African plains. On those evenings, I fell into the exotic dream of grasslands and deserts, of rainforests and sand dunes. At the Elmwood 1820, inspired by the innkeeper's thoughtful details, a cowhide rug, a bed draped in shears, meant to mimic mosquito netting, that wanderlust came rushing back. I settled in for the night and planned an excursion to one of the greatest places I know for adventure. I wouldn't have to go too far. A few days later, I boarded an open-air safari vehicle at the North Carolina Zoo with a handful of other passengers for an hour-long in-the-wild tour of the Whetani grasslands. They call this excursion, which is an extension of the standard zoo admission ticket, Zoofari. And after making it through two sets of safety enclosures and bouncing down a long dirt path, we found ourselves less than 25 yards from eight southern white rhinoceroses. Our guide, Anna, a marine biologist studying at UNC Wilmington, explained that our clay soil tints the rhino's skin Randolph County red, she called it, when they wallow in the mud to keep cool. She introduced us to Olivia, who, at age 53, is one of the three oldest rhinos in the world, and Linda, who, with her two-foot-long primary horn, is clearly the one in charge. As we roamed in our truck, a couple of greater kudu walked right beside us, just like the ones I'd watched on television. Their curling, twirling horns spiraling toward the sky, a breathtaking sight. And then, around a bend, a herd of East African oryx came into view. We were close enough to spot the ridges on their upswept horns, close enough to see them bow their heads to the grounds, leisurely grazing the grass and shrubs of the habitat, unconcerned by our presence. Such magnificent creatures. Content, I'd like to think, with this beautiful place that they and we call home. And now, as I like to do on the first reading of every month, I'm going to help interpret the beautiful photography in the photo pictorial session in the middle of the magazine. It has a lot of words every month, but the emphasis is really on the pictures that they're talking about. Here's one that is either an excerpt from the cover or one that was taken very close in time to the cover photo. It says, "The horses that run wild on Carrot Island often swim to Town Marsh, Bird Shoal, or Horse Island, all part of the Rachel Carson Reserve in search of better grazing." And the article, or rather the pictorial this month, is called Horse Tales, T-A-L-E-S. Since the first horses arrived in North Carolina 500 years ago, they've been guiding us. They teach us about patience and compassion, freedom and strength. With grace, these majestic creatures carry our burdens, heal our hearts, and inspire our spirits. Written by Katie King. We've got seven brown horses just galloping through low water. I would say, about a foot deep in a marshy area at the edge of a larger body of water on Carrot Island. Over Leaf, the Rachel Carson Reserve in Beaufort, we have three horses, all brown in the foreground. They are tromping through fairly shallow water. This must be like 3 inches or something like that, and there's some marsh grass between us and them, and then there's some open water and some more marsh, and then a lot more horses further out in additional marsh. We don't know how deep the water is between them and us, but there is an expanse of water. They either came straight across or they followed that marsh to shore, someplace out of view. The text for the picture says, "Wild horses share the 2,315 acres of salt marsh, beaches, and maritime forest that make up the Rachel Carson Reserve with river otters, gray foxes, marsh rabbits, raccoons, and about 200 bird species. Wild horses feed on cordgrass and sea oats, dig into the ground for fresh water, and swim among the islands to make up the Rachel Carson Reserve. Unlike their neighbors on Shackelford Banks, about 130 descendants of colonial Spanish Mustangs, many of these horses have a dorsal stripe, the result of the introduction of a domestic gene. In the late 1940s, Dr. Luther Fulcher, a Beaufort physician, began moving horses, including both banker ponies, as the wild mustangs are commonly called, and domestic quarter horses, to a pen on Bird Shoal. When Fulcher died, the horses remained, and they and their descendants became feral. Today, a herd of about 30 horses is protected by the state and managed by the North Carolina Coastal Reserve as part of Carteret County's cultural heritage. And now the Tryon International Equestrian Center in Mill Spring. Horses canter through a twisting obstacle course, bounding between fence hurdles and leaping up to about 5 feet to clear them. The town of Tryon is considered by some to be the birthplace of modern show jumping. The competition at the center of the Saturday Night Lights event at the Tryon International Equestrian Center and Resort, the TIEC. With 13 arenas and 7 barns, TIEC is a world-class facility for equestrian events, hosting 40 weeks of Olympic-level competitions in jumping, dressage, and more each year. Most of the events are free and open to the public. On any given night, there might be anywhere from 3,000 to 8,000 spectators cheering in the stands. There are 25 International Boulevard in Tryon, or rather in Mill Spring. The address of the website they use is tryon.com. And there's a couple of photos here. One is a horse and rider jumping over a 5-foot-high white brick, it looks like. It could be, it's probably actually white-painted wood, some sort of a, whatever you call those things, gate that you jump over or whatever. Obviously, I haven't been to one of these. Saturday Night Lights at the TIEC, held on select weekends from May through October, features Grand Prix show jumping competitors like Daniel Seifert, who's riding Alma Z in the photo I just talked about. This is another photo of the very tan, maybe it's sand that they're running on. I was going to say tan-colored soil. It's probably sand out there. And all of the jumping gates, various styles. There's a double one in the center. Some of them are lower than others. Some are higher, and they are all around in various places on the ring. There are high spotlights. There are people here sitting in what look like the prime seats, because they are not very many other people around them. They look like fairly comfortable chairs. And in the distance, the cheap seats, the bleachers on the other side there. And there are some riders outside. And the sky is just a beautiful sunset of purples and yellows and bright color, which is almost white. How about the Leatherwood Mountain Resort in Ferguson? There are riders who bring their horses to Leatherwood for the weekend and riders who board here permanently. There are visitors who don't have horses on their own who come for guided trail rides and a night or two in a cozy cabin. Then there are those who come and never want to leave, so they buy a house here. That's what friends Phil Whitson and Phil Rash each did in the early 1990s. And in 2004, they bought the whole resort. Now Whitson's son Trevor and Rash's protege, Abby Hanchi, who's working at Leatherwood since 1993, own the 115-acre resort and manage 45 short-term rental properties, from mountaintop mansions with sweeping views to the two small cabins across from the stables, where endurance riders and pleasure riders alike can be seen heading out to the trails. They're at 512 Meadow Road, and the address of the website is leatherwoodmountains.com. Photo here of 4 riders on a trail. On the left of them are tall deciduous trees. On the right is grass. They're headed toward an area where there is an open lean-to and a pavilion and some picnic tables and a larger covered building. And it says Leatherwood was established in 1986 on former rodeo grounds. For those who don't have horses of their own, the resort offers 1- and 2-hour guided rides on about 75 miles of private trails in Wilkes County. And now, Smokemont Riding Stables in Cherokee. About 6 miles north of Cherokee, on the banks of the Okanalufti River, the family-run Smokemont Riding Stables have been offering the only guided trail rides in the North Carolina section of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park since the 1960s. From the saddle of one of their 60 or so horses, riders see the park from a different perspective as they ford the Okanalufti from either pass through a tunnel beneath U.S. Highway 441 or stop at Chasteen Creek Waterfall. Horse-drawn wagon rides on the historic route of the Okanalufti. I always have to pause and read it syllable by syllable. Okanalufti Turnpike, one of the area's earliest roads, offer a glimpse into the past and possibly a glimpse of wildlife, including turkeys or elk, They're at 135 Smokemont Riding Stable Road. Website is smokemontridingstable.com. The caption on the picture says Smokemont's wagon is usually pulled by Big Rob at more than 2,000 pounds and 18.3 hands, which is about 6 feet tall, from hoof to withers. He's the biggest horse at the stables and also one of the gentlest. And it's taken from up close to Big Rob, so he really looks big. And there's a man in a red T-shirt and jeans and a cap who is holding onto the reins from the front seat of the wagon. And there's some family in the back seat, including a very young boy in a blue baseball cap, peering out at us. And on the left-hand side, there are four riders coming out of the river. Looking up at the cameraman, you can see lots of horses have been on that riverbank because there are many hoof marks on the shore. And now, trailbred riders with a Z at the end in Charlotte. When 100 horses parade through uptown Charlotte, heads turn. Members of Trailbred Riders, an urban saddle club that began in 2017, spend most of the year traveling to the countryside to ride and attend rodeos. But each April, the club hosts its city ride through uptown, which is open to the public, and each October, it hosts a family-friendly bonfire in the Mallard Creek neighborhood to shine a spotlight on black riders and encourage others to get into the saddle. Riding helps with confidence. It helps with energy. It helps with feeling because your attention is on this 2,000-pound animal, says Amber Thompson, the club's marketing manager. You're either going to be scared or you're going to take on the challenge. Trailbred Riders' annual bonfire will be held in Charlotte on October 15th. They're on Facebook as Trailbed Riders, and remember, Riders ends with a Z. Trailbed Riders has around 10 members ranging in age from 16 to 60, including from left, as shown below, club president Curtis Thompson, Amber Thompson, and Colby Waiters, and Zaire Gaston. Most members ride, but some just come to have fun and support the group. Amber says it's not always about riding. And now we have Hope Reins, R-E-I-N-S, in Raleigh. Many of the 17 horses at Hope Reins were rescued from abuse or neglect, but at this equine mentorship in Raleigh, they're the ones doing the rescuing. Since 2010, Hope Reins has, at no cost, helped nearly 3,000 kids heal from emotional trauma. Some come from backgrounds of violence and poverty, others have lost a loved one, and many struggle with depression or anxiety. By bonding with horses that have also overcome adversity, the kids learn about trust, boundaries, communication, and leadership. And both horses and humans find love and hope. They're on Wake Forest Highway, hopereins.org. Picture here, Mason Armada, 11, joined Hope Reins' equine membership program about a year ago. He quickly bonded with Zeb, who was given to the Raleigh Police Department after being abandoned. Senator Bob Martin, Eastern Agricultural Center in Williamston. Named for former Senator R.L. Bob Martin, a retired farmer and railroad official from nearby Bethel, who served 9 terms in the North Carolina Senate beginning in 1985. This agricultural center is a landmark in eastern North Carolina. The center has become a popular venue for events like ATV and motocross races, circuses, and boat shows, but it mainly hosts horse shows in its 108,000-square-foot indoor coliseum. They have a website, showwithus.com. The caption on this photo says, 10-year-old Margaret Willis has been riding since she was 5. She competes in the hunter division on her Welsh pony, Annabee Casanova, otherwise known as Oscar. Now, this is a pure white pony. She has on white riding breeches and a nice gray jacket and a a riding helmet, which is a very good thing to have on. My own brother-in-law was thrown off his horse that he's ridden for many years, broke his shoulder, had helmet. I don't know if he had a helmet on, so I can't say how his head fared under that. But you can have problems with horses. They are big animals. That's Senator Bob Martin, Eastern Agricultural Center. NC4-H horse program in Ellerby. On 320 acres in the sand hills, tucked amid longleaf pines, the Millstone 4-H camp welcomes young horse enthusiasts for its week-long horsemanship camp each June. The camp was constructed by the Works Progress Administration in 1938 and opened for its first group of 4-H campers the following year. For more than 45 years, the horsemanship camp has been a key experience at Millstone, educating riders on topics like showmanship, technique, and horse judging. The camp is just one part of the NC4-H Horse Program, a statewide organization that teaches kids to appreciate their equine companions through trail rides, art and riding contests, community service projects, and horse shows. Equinehusbandry.ces.ncsu.edu. This picture here shows a young rider jumping over a very low gate, as one might expect for a young rider. And on the right, at the Millstone 4-H Course Camp Horsemanship Week in June 12th, or rather in June, 12-year-old Chloe Deans and 8-year-old Tootie, I guess that's the name of her pony, Macaulay, learned riding skills and horse care. Or Tootie Macaulay is the name of the young person riding on the left-hand side, I guess. But both kids look really happy to be there. Farriers. Rick Langford, Reidsville. As a teenager learning how to shoe horses, Rick Langford never thought that he would follow in his father's footsteps as a farrier. But before applying to college, he started helping his dad out in earnest. Within 3 weeks, going to school never crossed my mind, he says. That light bulb went off and I never looked back. That was nearly 40 years ago. Now Langford is vice president of the North Carolina Horseshoers Association and a journeyman farmer from the most advanced certification available from the American Farriers Association. He begins the process by removing the horse's old shoe and cleaning and trimming the foot. Then he forages the new one, shapes it to the foot, and nails it on. Finally, he clinches the nails down and sands the hoof, and the horse is ready to ride. The photos here have a caption. Hot shoeing is when the horse shoe is heated in a forge, allowing farriers like Rick Langford to mold the shoe onto the hoof and get a tighter seal. If the process is done right, he says, they feel nothing. We are looking at a red hot horse shoe here, held by tongs, of course, against an anvil, and a hammer of a certain style being hit to it to close the loop of the horseshoe a little bit, because it's got to fit a horse of a different size. And then we see a picture of the farrier trying to fit the horse's, or measure the shoe, I think, against a horse's leg, which I think is between his legs. It's a little hard to see exactly what's going on there. There's a lot of steam in the picture also. Western Tack, Dan Stevens in Reidsville. Cowboy hat, vest, cheeks, and lasso. The Western-style rider's attire is all about functionality. When Don Stevens began riding 2.5 years ago, after an injury prevented him from continuing as a competitive cyclist, he knew that this was the kind of rider he wanted to be. We all grew up with cowboy movies, but I never really had the opportunity, he says. This mashup of things came together, and I decided to jump in, but I really jumped in. Stevens' hat protects his face from the sun and from tree branches on the trail, while the chinks, a shorter version of chaps, provides an extra layer of warmth as well as protection for his knees when he's wrestling calves. The Western-style saddle, unlike the smaller English version, has a horn on the front for anchoring the lasso while he's roping cattle. Mostly, though, Stevens just likes to ride his horse, Sherlock, in parks and on trails across North Carolina. There's a wonderful feeling when you have your horse. You pick the trail, he says. You take care of each other. The captions here, Dan Stevens bought his 12-year-old Palomino Sherlock when he began riding in 2020. Traditional Western tack gives Stevens the tools he needs for calf roping and ranch sorting competitions. He sits on his horse here, a beautiful, very light-colored, sort of a brown or ivory color mane and upper body and an ivory tail. He's standing against a field, barbed wire in the background. He's got his chaps on and he's looking forward. And there's a close-up of him having his rope, his lasso that they talked about, attached to the little pommel there on the saddle. World-class Robin Bruckman in Summerfield. When Robin Bruckman fell on some ice and developed paralysis in her lower right leg in 1994, she wasn't able to get on a horse for nearly a year, a devastating loss for someone who'd been riding since she was 7 years old. That was my identity, and suddenly I couldn't ride, she says. I didn't have an alternative identity. Eventually, she learned to ride without stirrups, and she's competed in the Paralympic Games in 2000 and 2008, as well as other world-class competitions. After having her leg amputated and getting a prosthesis in 2011, she mostly competes as a professional open rider in both classical and Western dressage, and she judges horse shows, selects U.S. international para-riders, and teaches clinics and workshops all over the world. Caption says, Robin Bruckman nicknamed her horse Sierra Anna, a 7-year-old Hanoverian, IKEA, because she came as a kit, and I had to assemble her myself, she jokes. I love training young horses. Close-up picture of the brown horse's head. Got a little hat on, a little knit hat, protecting her eyes. And here's the Robin herself on the left-hand side. She's on the horse, and she has a great big Western buckle on. She's wearing a blue shirt and a protective helmet. We aren't going to get to read about Harness Track and Fair Barn in Pinehurst, but they have such a long website address, I can't possibly read it to you, but they're in Beulah Hill Road South. Lady here, it says the 1917 Fair Barn is the oldest fair exhibition hall in North Carolina. It serves as the backdrop for competitions like dressage, show jumping, and harness racing. And it is a beautiful building. The lady herself is riding a dark brown horse. Just gorgeous. Well, we have run out of time once again for our issue of Our State magazine. I hope you enjoyed it enough that you'll return to listen again next week. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions, call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.